episode of Mrs. King's Chronicles, a podcast by the fans and for the fans of the 80s hit TV show Scarecrow Mrs. King. I'm Taya Johnston, and I'm joined by my very good friends Lexi Fema, Jen Peterson, and Miranda Thomas. We will be discussing Three Little Spies.
As Taya mentioned, today we're going to talk about the season 3 episode Three Little Spies. In our revised order, it's episode 16, but it originally aired as episode 21. The original air date was April 7th, 1986, and it was directed by Oz Scott. So we originally talked about him in season 1, but just as a quick refresher, he has 112 total directing credits, and he's also directed 3 Scarecrow Mrs. King episodes. So the first one where we talked about him was filming Rowell. He directed this one, obviously, Three Little Spies, and then the Khrushchev List, which is, as we all know, the very last episode of the series. Three Little Spies was written by Tom Chahak. He has 29 overall writing credits, and 5 of those were for Scarecrow and Mrs. King. So the first one that he wrote for is Three Little Spies, and the rest are in season 4. So it's in the Water, Billy's Lost Weekend, Rumors of My Death, and Do You Take This Spy? Special note, he also wrote for other popular shows like Mr. Merlin, Hunter, Spencer for Hire, Diagnosis Murder, and Regenesis. Interestingly enough, he also has 15 producers credits total, and for Scarecrow and Mrs. King, he was a producer actually on 28 episodes, starting with the pilot. He began again as a producer, starting on some of the season 3 episodes and lasting through season 4. So for the guest stars, there's only 2 that I wanted to highlight today, but the first is Jodie Long, and she played Jin Sung. And she was born in January 1954 in New York City. She has 70 total acting credits and is only featured in this one Scarecrow and Mrs. King episode. So as far as film goes, she has some smaller parts in well-known movies like The Hot Chick, Splash, RoboCop 3, and Striking Distance. She was in several one-off parts on TV in shows like Roseanne, The Cosby Show, Sex and the City, American Dad, Desperate Housewives, The Blacklist. And then she had some longer TV parts in shows like All-American Girl, Mismatch, Falling Water, and she's also still active today. She actually has 1 project in the works. She plays Mrs. Basil E. in the show Dash and Lily. The last guest star that I'll talk about today is Robert Picardo, and he played Randall Schuyler in this episode. So he was born in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania in October 1953, and he actually has quite a few acting credits, 234 total. So he's had several notable TV appearances. I wrote down a bunch of them, but just to highlight a few, The Golden Girls, The Wonder Years, Home Improvement, ER, Grey's Anatomy, Bones, Castle, Smallville, Stargate, SG-1, and Atlantis, Ally McBeal, and again, so many others. He was actually nominated for an Emmy for his work in The Wonder Years in the category of Outstanding Guest Actor in a Comedy Series. And then the big one for him, he has a huge Star Trek legacy. So in Star Trek Voyager, he was in 170 episodes as the holographic doctor. And he's also been in a lot of the spin-off shows as well. So that includes Star Trek First Contact, Deep Space Nine, Renegade, etc. He's also an accomplished singer. He actually put out 2, he's sang in some album accompaniments to the shows like Virtuoso 2000 and Star Trek Voyager The Swarm. And then he's actually the only Star Trek regular to have ever written an episode. And he's still very active as well. He actually has 5 in-progress productions. So those are the 2 big ones that I thought were most interesting. But that wraps up the guest stars.
Very nice. I was hoping you would say about him being on Star Trek, because I was like, I remember him being the holographic doctor on there.
Oh, okay, got yeah. it. Yeah, I haven't ever watched it as well, but it was, you know, really featured on his IMDb profile.
Yeah, he was really good on it. It was a good character.
One of his quotes, so he himself is bald and his last name's Picardo. So he said, if Picard can baldly go, why not Picardo? Because right, one of the characters is Picard or something, I think.
Yeah, Jean-Luc Picard.
So, anyway, yes, that was his quote.
That's funny. We have the revised shooting final script, and it is dated March 6, 1986. And there are some differences, so that'll be fun. We'll tackle those as they come up.
Lee and Amanda must work with Russian and Chinese spies to stop the smuggling of detonators under the guise of a U.S. charity delivering food overseas.
So this episode opens very similarly. When I started watching it the other day, I was like, did we already do this one? Do I have it in like in the wrong order or something? Because it opens very much like Wrong Number, which we just did.
Yeah.
Prior to this. And it opens very similarly to it. And I was like, oh, I swear to God, we've already done this one. But then I realized, oh, I was thinking of Wrong Number. So this opens very similarly to Wrong Number. Looks like it's the same quarry base that they used in that one. And we see trucks coming, chasing down this other truck. Dirt's flying everywhere. And it's supposedly, I think in the script it said it was between the borders of China and Russia. And so there was the Chinese and the Russians coming at them. And they're fighting off this vehicle that's coming from Pakistan. Now, in the script, it is different because there's an actual poker game going on, which we obviously are not seeing here. Border crossing in China at night. This is a well-lit concrete section of road blocked by two border gates 20 feet apart. You see Broghill Border Crossing China on the sign. They are huddled by a guard station playing an animated game of poker. They are having a good time. On duty, but bored as he walks back and forth in front of his border gate, an automatic weapon strapped on his shoulder, this Russian soldier, super Russian, super, says, Russian occupied Afghanistan, 3 a.m. He crosses to a fellow soldier who stands outside a phone booth-sized border station. The two dig for a cigarette. The sound of a truck approaching makes them look towards the Chinese border. Also aware of the approaching truck, but not interested in the poker game, is the Chinese. As it pulls up to the Chinese border gate, this canvas-back truck, a Pakistani national, he appears calm but is nervous. Reluctantly grabs his gun, leaves the poker game, and crosses to the canvas truck. The Pakistani national hands the Chinese soldier his papers, and he glances at them and the truck. His mind is on the poker game. A phone begins to ring in the border station. The Pakistani looks over to see as a higher-ranking Chinese officer reluctantly leaves the card game to answer the phone inside their small border station. As the Pakistani offers the Chinese soldier who is checking his truck a wickered bottle of Asian moonshine, the Chinese soldier smiles and raises the gate. The truck drives off towards the Russian contingency. So then the Chinese guy on the phone's nodding emphatically. His face is now serious. He quickly puts down the phone, pulls a pistol from his holster, and races toward the canvas truck, now in no man's land between the borders. As shots ring out, their boredom disappears. Guns are quickly readied. They move into no man's land. As they move past the open cab door, we see the Pakistani driver motionless, slumped over the wheel. The Russians pay little attention and move to the back of the truck where they join the Chinese. So that's why we kind of miss all that, which explains why they're both chasing this guy. So I see why they left it out, because it's like, but you kind of need to know why they're doing that in the first place, you know?
Yeah. Well,
not necessarily the poker game, but.
Why did they change it to Afghanistan in the episode?
I don't know.
That's a requirement.
Yeah.
Because you should have just left it as one of the borders or.
Yeah.
Maybe because they had to use the quarry and that's a dry area instead of China or
instead of a cold tundra area.
They want to make it somewhat realistic.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's what's happening. That's because I couldn't figure that out. I was like, when I was watching it just, you know, recently, I was like, why would, it's not like the Chinese and Russians like were working together, you know, so why would they be both like on this truck? Now it makes sense. The Pakistani guy was coming across with that stolen detonator, and that guy got caught between the two borders. Makes a little bit more sense now.
Yeah, give some context.
Yeah. Which, I don't know, I think they could have even superimposed some of that information. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
To help
like get a line or two of someone to say, like, oh, you know, something about it. I don't know what they would say, but it could have just been something so quick. They wouldn't have had to show it. They wouldn't have had to do anything, but it would have made us not so confused, wondering,
exactly,
know, about the show.
Exactly. Yeah. So anyways, that's what it was. They are pissed because they had their poker game ruined, which, you know, as a poker player, I would feel the same way. Just say. So when they do open the back, as the film version progresses, when they do open it up, they see a box. And the box is...
That little take thing, is that... That looks like a Hollywood prop to me and not a real... A military weapon.
The little yes. tank thing? Oh, totally. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, those guys can get shot right off of there. They're just putting
yep. up. Yep. Yeah, it's pretty low. It's low, too.
And small.
Yeah.
Yes.
So they shoot up this vehicle, and I was half expecting, even now rewatching it recently, I was half expecting the guy to like get up out of the seat and like start shooting at him really close, but he was dead. So
yeah,
when they do open it up, so you got the Russian, clearly a Russian guy and a Chinese soldier there, and they open up the back and then they look at the box that's in the back of the vehicle and they're like totally perplexed, like what the heck? Like, this guy, you know, died over this for Ron's mom's cornbread mix. Like, I wonder, there's an actual picture. I don't know if you guys can see it. There's an actual picture of a person, like a mom on there. I wonder if that's some, like a crew member's mom or something. Yeah. You know? Yeah. That'd be kind of funny. And if his name was Ron, that'd be kind of even funnier. Anyways, so... as soon as this scene ends, you know, them just being completely perplexed on what the hell they're looking at, then we cut right to Billy and Lee looking at a map, and Billy's explaining that the label on the box that they found was Ron's mom's cornbread, and there was one of the stolen detonators from Harrisburg was in there. And then Lee says in here that he's been opening that case for the past 2 years. So he's been working it on and off, trying to figure out what, you know, what happened with those detonators. And now it seems to be have been reopened. And they had dead ends all that time. He said, you know, now thanks to the Pakistanis, the Russians and the Chinese think they're arming the Pakistanis. So that's going to cause some problems because of all the... you know, with the Cold War going on, nobody's trusting anybody anyways. I do like Francine's outfit here, the red and the white. It's okay.
Lee looks good. Lee's outfit's good, too.
Well, I mean, the guy could be wearing a gunny sack, Jen.
But yes,
he does.
Later.
He does. He does. So Francine's got her perm now.
I love her hair.
The curls. You like the perm look?
I love it.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay.
Yep.
It definitely has some volume, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I like her in the red, and then she's got really bright red lipstick on. It actually looks really nice.
Yeah.
Usually she's mm-hmm. wearing more purples.
Mm-hmm.
Or beige. we got the beige year, right. too, I forgot. But she looks nice in the red.
Yeah.
See, we get more sophisticated with the outfits. Like Francine's, and you see Amanda later with the white and the black.
Yeah.
It's just a lot more... Like, it's good looking. It's not,
do you think it's because...
It's not the early 80s, maybe it's the late 80s.
That's what I was wondering. Do you think it's because we're moving...
Yeah.
Although it's still 80s, but, I mean, we're moving past the not-so-good part of the 80s, maybe? In the fashion department, at least? Yeah, maybe. Maybe they're doing it on purpose, that maybe it's a progression thing of their careers, maybe? Or just, I think, more likely it's... just the 80s, the time of the years. Now it's 85, getting close to 86, right? It's 86.
If I recall the 80s correctly, the bad stuff lasted till like 88.
Well, it seems to be getting better.
I know I live in Cincinnati and everything takes longer to leave here,
maybe,
but
it's 86.
We had big hair bangs until like 90, so
yeah,
I
sure.
know.
Yeah. Well, this is more adult, though. This isn't the kids in the high school. You know what I mean? That's a little different.
Yeah, but no.
But look at her bangs. They're not, like, small, dude, by any means.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
They're quite big. So this is early 86. So perhaps maybe we're just getting into a better era of fashion at this point. But
or maybe Francine just found a better hairdresser.
Yeah, but we're talking about her outfits, too.
Oh, that's true.
You know? You definitely take her more seriously looking like this than...
Like this,
you know,
than more,
before.
Yeah.
Your hand starts to go downhill and wears those crazy jackets and stuff.
Yes, what was with that? That was awful.
So, yeah, there was like a trade-off of sorts.
We could have a whole episode on those weird jackets. So Francine's here to move the plot along. She's explaining that the Chinese and Russians think that we just broke the treaty that we had on the arms race. And she said that the president took the straight line and said, you know, admitted to the detonators being stolen instead of, you know, back then everything was, you kept everything close to your chest, you know? So the president took a novel approach and was honest with the Russians and the Chinese. Billy and Lee are like, what? She goes, yeah, he admitted the whole thing. He told them about the stolen detonators. He said he told them about the other stolen detonators. She goes, all nine of them. And he also told them about the integrated guidance gyros, the U-7 backup actuators, and the System 8 adaptability. Lee, I like this. Lee's like, oh, great. All the ingredients for a little Armageddon. He goes, they're going to rub that in our face for the next few arms talks. And she goes, actually, they... both the Chinese and the Russians see it as an honest exchange between countries, which I think that's way above if this was a true scenario that happened, I don't think that they would all be like, oh, that's so nice and refreshing. You know, they'd be like, what are you hiding? Or what are you, you know, it was very, nobody trusted anybody back then. It seemed.
Yeah.
Looking back on it. I mean, I didn't know.
I mean, by the three agents interacting with each other, right. Like that's how I would feel like it would be is, you know, and then for the big leaders, I mean, maybe because they're trying to save face and it's coming from the top down, but I feel like how the three interact together is much more accurate of how it actually was.
Right.
Not, again, I don't know, but that's what it seems. Yeah. You know.
Translation for everyone. Lexi saying, I wouldn't know because I'm not old like you people and I don't know.
No, it's not what I mean.
You were being very careful not to say that.
I was being very careful. That's really exactly right.
I could see it in your eyes. Like, don't say they're old. Don't say they're old.
How can I spin this?
Well appreciated. Yeah. It's unnecessary. We know we're older. Oh, it's funny.
You can handle it. We can handle it.
Yes, yes. We're proud of our age. Not really. Not really. Billy thinks something's up and he's like, which means, you know, if they're thinking this is an honest exchange, then he goes, that means they must want something. So he's already, you know, not buying into that bull either. Right. He's suspicious of it too. So, and he's like, but what do they want? And Francine's like, oh, well, like, let me finish. And she said that they want to have an international task force to find the detonators. They have Isaac Petrovich from the KGB, Zhang Cheng from the Chinese government, and the U.S. agent who was originally in charge of the investigation of the stolen detonators. And she kind of like gives him like a look like he's not going to like this. And he's like, forget it. I'm not doing it. He goes, no, no, no. You cannot order me to do this. Which, obviously, he can order him, and he does order him. Billy must know. It's kind of funny, because Francine's got a file there, and Billy looks at her, and she pulls out this, you know, presidential order. How would he know she has that? You know, obviously, he knows because he's acting and all that stuff, but, I mean, he didn't know she had that. And he, like, holds out his hand, like, give me the order. And she hands it to him, and he goes, see this? This is an order that says you will do it. Mm-hmm. It's kind of funny. There's no way he would have known she had that in there.
That's true.
Because she had it close to her chest the whole time. So
yeah,
or it wasn't really an order. It was just him saying, "You know what? This is an executive order. Even no matter what it was,
that'd be good."
Just so he could say, "You that know would what? Be good. Just do what you're told."
You know, if she's the admin, the awesome admin that, you know, she portrays herself to be, she would totally already have that in her head that that's what she was going to do, you know?
Yeah.
She'd be reading his mind what he wanted. Okay, I like the front of her hair. The back of her head looks kind of messy. It's at 431. It looks kind of messy.
I don't know. I like it. It's kind of wild and curly and yeah. All the things.
I guess considering I have mine's never. Probably a rat's nest in the back of my head, I probably am a little more sensitive to that, perhaps.
I like her little scalloped back of her jacket. Kind of cute.
Yeah, the bottom. On the bottom part? Yeah, it's cute. She looks good in the red. She does.
Yeah. The front of it, I don't know why, it's just giving me like Sailor Moon vibes.
A little bit.
which I like. I think it's cute. I just, you know, like, yeah, like just. Super
yeah, that's why I was asked when she said she liked the scalloped. I like the bottom of the scallop part, but I don't like the top straight part. It does look
this curved part.
Yeah, that's what I like too. I don't like the top part because it does look like a little sailor a little bit too much. Anyways, it's funny. Come on, you can't put me in there with those cold-blooded killers, those jackals.
Bloodsuckers, right? Isn't that what he said?
Jackals.
Somebody said jackals?
He says jackals.
Said blood suckers.
Yeah, he does. He says
that too. Oh, okay.
He calls them all sorts of lovely words.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Jackal's such a good word.
I know. It does. It like really gives you a vivid image.
Lots of good words that he could use prior to 9 p.m. on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you would say something else. He's like, Lee, you're just going to have to try and get along with them. And he goes, okay, but then you're going to have to give me two more agents to keep an eye on those two bloodsuckers 24 hours a day. Francine seems to love this. She goes, excuse me. It says here that only one agent per country. And he's like, oh, come on. She goes, but it doesn't say anything about working with a non-agent. And then she kind of looks at Billy like, And then he's like looking at him like, oh, you cannot be serious. Like, you want me to put Amanda in with those? I think that's when he says, you want to put Amanda in with those jackals?
Yeah.
He goes, are you crazy? He goes, those guys play hardball. Come on, they'll turn on you just like that. He goes, I need help. He goes, I know it. He finally gives in.
So do you think that he's worried about Amanda getting in trouble, or is he worried that Amanda's not going to help him watch the two spies that he considers
troublemakers? No, I kind of saw it as those guys are cutthroat, and he doesn't want Amanda anywhere around that. That's how I saw it.
So you think it's protective?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
As opposed to...
That's how, what I think, but that's my personal opinion. What about you two?
I think so. Yeah.
See, I sort of took it the opposite way. Oh. What's the right word?
It could have been taken the other way, I guess. But given where this episode came in season 3, he should have been beyond all that stuff.
Yeah, that's what I think. True. Yeah, I think it's more he doesn't want her anywhere around those bad guys. Not that she couldn't hold her own.
Not that she couldn't handle it, just that he didn't want her to have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that maybe something could happen. Like, it probably wouldn't happen, but he wouldn't want to risk it. Mm-hmm. That's how I saw it.
I'll agree. I'll change my opinion.
You don't have to agree. I mean, you can... that's what I think is. I think it's that...
I think it's more out of concern for her than concern that she can't do the job.
Right.
I was just reiterating. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so, mm-hmm. too.
And he just didn't want her in a bad situation.
Right.
So, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, because I don't think, especially this was supposed to be 21, right? Episode 21.
Yeah.
So, well, it wasn't supposed to be what it was.
I'm surprised at where it fell, actually. Mm-hmm. In terms of, it just, I don't know. I mean, I guess you had a few moments that made it seem like in season 3, but not really at all.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It seems more where we have it. That's why we put this here, I think. And it's hard. Everybody keeps asking about, you know, I asked a lot why we put certain episodes in the order that we did. And it's more, you know, it's obviously, first off, our opinion or opinions, right? And secondly, there's certain parts that just flow better relationship-wise. And that's kind of why we put it in the way we did. Not necessarily maybe continuity. It was more their relationship was building in a certain way. So that's why we put it here, 16, because it doesn't feel like a 21 to me.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with you guys here. I haven't always agreed.
I know.
But...
I'm so glad you do. Finally. Finally, it only took 16 episodes.
I agree with this one.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, good. I'm glad. That makes me feel a little better about it. And then we're on the good side of the fashion police today. So let's continue that, because I think... Kate looks really cute here in that gingham shirt. Is that gingham?
I love her hair too.
Her hair looks so cute.
So cute.
And her makeup is like just flawless.
Mm-hmm.
She looks really good.
I love it up like that. I love it when she puts it up like
that. Yeah, and with the little sweat bang, it's really cute.
Yeah, I'm telling you, they had a better costume / stylist for this episode because I thought they all looked good.
Yeah.
Even the guest stars looked good.
That's true.
Yeah, I guess so. We do have flowers, yellow flowers on the counter. We also get to see Dottie. I'm not a big fan of that. I'm not a big fan of those sweaters, sweater vests at all. And then
I thought it looked cute.
Not a big fan myself. The shirt, the oversized shirt's cute.
Her shirt underneath. Yeah. I think the vest is very like cute grandma look to it. Yeah. Like it's.
I just don't like the colors or the style myself.
Yeah, it's cute.
Yeah. The boys look cute back there. You got Philip and Jamie both. They're doing something back there. And they're getting bigger. You know, they're maturing more.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of funny. But yeah, she does look really, really pretty in that shirt and the hair and the makeup. It's just very clean and it looks really all American.
Yeah.
And then she's brought in a suitcase. And apparently, do you guys do that? Do you put stuff in your suitcases like for storage?
I put like suitcase related or traveling item related things.
Okay. I can see that.
You know, like a storage thing or like a laundry bag, but not toiletries, like, not like books or a childhood memorabilia or anything like
Isn't that funny? Maybe
she was limited on storage. We never saw a basement that she had. Maybe she's just sticking things where she had extra space.
Probably.
Also, remember is the 80s and air travel wasn't as frequent, I don't think, as it is now. I remember not flying very much, and suitcases were kind of a novelty. So I can imagine, you know, if we didn't do it very much.
Yeah, I didn't travel until I was like 15.
We traveled all the time, even if we didn't fly.
But did you take a suitcase?
Oh, yeah.
Oh. See, I only took a suitcase. I don't know.
My mom had a matching suitcase set. She had a makeup case. She had a small bag. She had the big bag. And she put all of our stuff. Well, my brother and I would have little ones. But she would put all of their stuff, like all of my mom's stuff, all my dad's stuff. Everything pretty much fit in those four bags that she had. And it was like a matching hard case set. Like it was fancy.
Cute.
We used it all the time.
We do that. We have that now because, you know, we travel a lot. But growing up, I mean, I grew up with, you know, a family of 8 or 9 people. We didn't get to travel. I traveled the first time I was on a plane was 15. So,
hey, I was 20 the first time I was on
a plane. My kids were like a year old, you know. I mean, we travel way more. Well, so I think you're right, Jen. Growing up in the 80s, we didn't travel.
In the car.
Yeah.
Also, you think about her family. Specifically, being a divorced mother, too, I don't think she's jet setting around.
Sure.
Yeah.
She probably has a suitcase and she's like, I'll store my stuff in it.
I have one suitcase that's full of just bags, like purses and bags and everything like that. And then I'm like, Leslie, I have another one that's full of all of my travel stuff.
That's pretty smart, though. I guess if you do have like a lack of storage, they're there to store things anyway, so you might as well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask.
It makes sense to me.
Lexi, did you travel a lot when you were a kid?
Before college. My family were, my mom loved to camp, so we camped quite a bit.
Okay.
I went to Vegas, I think at least every other year because my grandpa lived out there. So that was a big one.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Disney World 2 times and then mostly it was like camping up north, that sort of thing. So not like United States sort of traveling.
Mm-hmm. We didn't do a lot of that. I guess we probably all couldn't fit in one car. I mean, we had a station wagon when I was little, we had a station wagon. Yeah. But after that, we got like a regular, like a Grand Marquis or something like that. And it fit like 5 people in, you know, maybe 6. And but we had too many kids growing up to even do that. So, okay. Interesting. So maybe, Jen, you're right. Maybe in the 80s, we just didn't, travel as much.
Well, if you remember too, like, and I remember this, we didn't travel, especially by air, but air travel was really rare, and you know, you had a full course meal on a plane. Do you guys remember
that's
that?
That's true. Mm-hmm. That is true. Yeah.
Everybody.
No matter where you were going. Yeah.
It was like silverware. It was like a big
insane.
Deal. It was a big deal.
Yeah.
But they could smoke on it too, which was horrendous.
Yeah, true. But now, you know, it's like you could get airfare pretty cheap. And, you know, but back in the day, it was quite the event.
You're probably right. You know, you don't think about it.
It's not super cheap right now. Holy macaroni.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. It's the prices are up right now.
I haven't looked because it's like, where the hell am I going to go now? You know, most places you have to be quarantined before you can even come into their state or whatever anyway. So a lot of them.
And they've grounded a lot of planes. I mean, I was out by our airport and there's just planes lined up. They're just, they aren't flying.
That's why the tickets are up, because they're
trying to make what people that definitely have to, they're trying to make up for it probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pack the plane some way. I don't know.
Amanda is unzipping the suitcase and she's like, Mother, what do you have in here? And we see blue and white pom-poms, and then we have yearbooks, and she said there's like an autograph book. I never had an autograph book. I think that was a 50s thing.
Book.
Yeah. And then she finds, and that's definitely a scrapbook. I wonder if they actually made that up, you know? Or if somebody just brought one in from home or something. Because it looks pretty legit. It looks like a real
pretty
one.
Stuff. Yeah.
And she's like, oh, Mother. She pulls out this raggedy old doll and she goes, Lois Ann. She goes, I can remember when you named Lois Ann. She goes, you used to cuddle her at night and tell her all your secrets and she'd soak up all your tears. It's very, this is a very sweet mother-daughter moment. It's very cute.
I'm going to be honest, like, watching this scene, I was like, I miss my mom.
That's so sweet.
It was sort of when she was holding the doll and then when Dottie says it's hard to let your daughter
yes.
go. Yes. I'm like, you leave me, but I can't. I'm driving the car.
It is a sweet moment, especially if your mom's
sweet.
Not alive, you know? I mean, I haven't seen my mom in, you know, since COVID started, really, or shortly after. So I can talk to her on the phone, but just even seeing her, it's hard. You know, you get so used to it. Oh, that's sweet.
It was a sweet mommy moment.
It really is.
You made me miss my mommy.
Yeah. And she's like, Amanda says, well, she was my best friend for a long time. And she says, it's hard to say goodbye to your little girl. And the look Amanda gives is so sweet. She looks so pretty there. Look how pretty.
I know.
So pretty. I love the side sweep of the bangs too. I think that's the key there. And she's like, oh, Mother. And she's like, Daddy's like, She goes, when I get back, we'll go through all this stuff and we're going to spend some time together, okay? She said, I like that. Now, in the script, guys, it's actually a little cuter.
Is that possible?
It is a little cute. I think it's really cute. Nope. Okay, it was just one line, but it's really cute. She says, Amanda says, she was my best friend for a long time. I can't believe I kept all this. And Daddy says, I guess it's hard to say goodbye to your little girl. Amanda gives her mother a hug. Then she says, when I get back, let's say hello again. And Dottie smiles. It was just sweet. You know, like, let's get reacquainted kind of thing. It was just really cute.
That's an interesting way to phrase it.
Yeah, it was a different, like, the phrasing was unique. And then, but in the actual film version, you know, she says, I love you. And then they kiss and then she goes. It's very sweet.
I love her stuff just all piled up on the table. She's going to leave this back. You guys,
her mom's going to take care of it for her.
Yeah, look at my scrapbook. No, put it back when I get home.
It's interesting. Those are real yearbooks. I'd love to know what those were. So then we skipped from that scene. We are then now in an airplane. And now David and I, when we went to California, he can get you into anything you want. He got into this museum that had airplane parts all over, like they rent them out to studios to film. Right. And so he got us in, we got to sit in the same cockpit that they use for the movie Airplane. And we were supposedly there for some movie.
Oh my
he
god!
Totally talked to, and we just kept having to. I'm like, well, do you think this is gonna work? was so funny.
Oh, my gosh.
But I have the most amazing pictures, you guys, and we got to walk through them, and that's what this is. It's set up. It's just like a shell of an airplane. It's a real airplane, but it's like a shell of it, and then they just light the hell out of it. It's really cool, and you really get a really cool idea of how they do this kind of stuff. But, man, I'll tell you what, you want to get into the Pentagon, that boy could get you in there. It's so funny. Francine looks a little harsher here. She's got her hair all pulled back now, and her eye makeup looks, she looks a little more tan, and she looks, her eye makes a little more fierce looking. When she's sitting there at the console in the plane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just, she looks a little more harsh to me.
Mm-hmm.
Where in the red outfit earlier with her hair down, it just looks so much softer.
Yeah. She kind of reminds me of Mrs. Marston in this, like with the bow tie up here and the harsh makeup. And anyway, just like a little bit of the vibes there.
Yeah.
Opposite of her other outfits.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We were just complimenting her, and now we have to like call the fashion police on her.
Maybe it's because she needed to look, Amanda needed to look more sophisticated in this scene.
Oh, maybe.
I don't know.
Yeah. Who was one of you guys? We were mentioning the black and white, the more classic look.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is that outfit there. So I like the pinstripe on the sleeve. You know, is that not pinstripe, but the double black lines there around her sleeve, the cuff.
Mm.
On Amanda's, and then the collar. It's really cute. It's so foreign to me to tuck your sweaters in. I would never tuck my sweater in.
Only if your
sweaters are so thick.
But she's so damn thin.
It's only because it's Kate, yeah.
I know, that's what I'm saying. It's so, nobody else could pull that off. They would look like a big, they'd be like muffin top, you know?
But, I don't know, like with an A-line skirt though, I tend to tuck my shirts in. If I'm wearing an A-line skirt where it's narrow at the waist, then I tuck shirts in. I don't
Will ever wear sweaters. She's wearing that's a sweater.
I mean, it's a sweater vest, but like a cardigan, for example. Like I would potentially tuck a cardigan in.
Really?
Yeah.
To your waistband?
Yeah.
I could not do that.
I couldn't do that either.
Would it have to be a stretchy waistband or could it be a button waistband? Because kids are all button stuff. That one's not a stretchy
waistband. I don't think it matters that way. A button one, it would have to be a zip. But yeah, I mean, if I'm wearing the cardigan over, then it's kind of like from the back, I'm just going to look like a freaking door, you know, and it's like a door. I tuck it in, then at least you see a little bit of the waist.
Yeah. And of course, she's got that damn belt in like 18 shades of colors. She's got the black one on this time. They're really cute. I actually had the purple one and it's very slimming. I probably couldn't put it around my thigh right now, but she has them in every color and they are very slimming on anybody. That V, you know what I'm talking about? V one. It does look good, but she's so thin anyways, but. Anyways, she does look very sophisticated here, even though I liked her hair on the last scene better because of the side sweep and the up, having it up. It looked really cute. But so Amanda seems to have her shit down, man. She's like just naming off where everything is and she's learning the console and how to use it. It seems like pretty easily. We don't know if she's been there for 8 hours trying to learn it. I don't know. But it seems like she's like just naming off things and just knows exactly how to use everything. So and is confident in it, too, you know?
Yeah. They used in the sequence, they used Zulu Blue again. I thought that was a pretty good continuity thing. Like
in a show
that, you know, struggles sometimes with continuity, like that they had that one tiny little detail is pretty good.
That's funny. Lee comes in. He's in the brown again. Not a big fan. I like him in the grays and the blues. The browns are just so drab looking.
Yeah.
He looks confused, though. He's like, why? What? He's like trying to process it all. And as you can see, he's just like, why are we allowing the Russians and the Chinese to see all this? Like, what's going on? So Amanda's like, okay, I think I got it all, Francine. And then Billy's saying that their guests are arriving. He's like, Francine, will you? And she's like, yeah. Do you like her skirt? Francine's skirt? It's very different.
I
I do, actually. I like the plaid. I do wish it was a little shorter because it looks very heavy, but mm-hmm. I think it's cute. I like the pattern.
It does look heavy.
Yeah.
I like the colors.
Mm-hmm.
I just, the only thing I don't like about it is that bow, that collar bow. It looks plus, I'd be like, itchy.
I think it, like, if the shirt was more, like, cute, like more modern or like more youngish looking, the bow is cute because I do like bow tie shirts like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the blazer with the long heavy skirt with the bow all together, the severe hairstyle, the heavy makeup, it just ages
and it
her
looks like she's
more
got
than it needs to.
Like a vest on too over top of the bow thing.
She does.
It looks like she's got like a sweater or a vest over top of it, over top of the shirt. Yeah, because she's got a jacket on too, so she's got three layers on.
Oh my god, I would be so hot. I
know.
Would be just like sweating.
It's,
I would be. You're right, Taya. Oh my god.
It's cute. It's just it looks really cumbersome and hot. It's not bad. I don't. It's growing on me. I don't hate it. I bet you it looks cute without the jacket on too.
Yeah, if it was just maybe the bow, the skirt, I could see like a cute pair of like stiletto leather boots, like black leather boots. That would be cute.
Yeah.
Or like, oh, a slouchy like cream sweater.
Ooh,
that would be
that
cute
would be
with
very
it.
Cute.
That would be really cute.
Yeah, that would be cute. So I don't hate the outfit. I'll say
mm-hmm.
that. But I hate Lee's brown on brown on brown on brown. I don't like
it. I agree.
At all.
His outfits get worse in this episode. I'll
fake
that for
later. The dad jeans are make their way on here, I think, which I don't like.
And the jackets. The jacket.
Yeah. not a big fan. So Lee's really, he's on edge. He's already at a 10 before they've even gotten there. You know, it's that anxiety.
Yeah.
He's just, and then now he's seeing all these, you know, what are supposed to be top secret tools and software and systems, and now the enemies, you know, his enemies are going to just be able to waltz in and see all this, and he just can't comprehend it. So he's just already boiling over, and they haven't even gotten into the airplane yet. He goes, "Did I miss the memo that changed their status? These used to be top secret." He goes, "They still are, but you'll need them to speak to me on the SpaceNet satellite." He goes, "You're activating SpaceNet?"
He's like, "These are my special things.
I want my toys." That's cute. So then Francine comes in and says, you know, she's like, she's like, "This is Isaac Petrovich, KGB, and Mr. Chang, Chinese intelligence." Oh, there you get to see her outfit a little bit more. It's
mm-hmm.
it's interesting. And then you see each of those gentlemen have counterparts with them. And boy, the looks that those men are giving each other, it's like a major pissing contest right there.
Yeah.
Oh, man, there's like just contempt. And Billy's like, "I believe you both know Stetson." And they're all like, you know. And then Amanda introduces herself that she's Mr. Stetson's assistant. And then the other two agents... Petrovich says, "This is Nadine. She doesn't speak English." Like, hell she doesn't. And then...
Spoiler!
And then Jen Sung is there, and she speaks fluent. She speaks Farsi and Urdu, so maybe her and Lee can talk later in Urdu, remember?
Yeah.
And...
But he was counting.
Yeah, right?
That was cute.
Petrovich says, "Three little spies..." And just kind of looks around and then he goes,
"Off to save the world."
Yeah, and then he goes, "Or is it six little spies?" And they're all like looking at each other like, "Are you a spy? I'm not a spy, are you?"
I really like that line. I mean, I know that's where the title of the episode comes from, but I think it's a cute line. Three little spies off to save the world.
Yeah. So Chang hands over a file and says, hands it over and says, "Pledge to deliver." He goes, "From the crate in the trunk." He goes, "You gave them access to all of this for that?" He goes, "These ID numbers are from the crate and what we need to start tracking for that smuggling ring." And so he has Francine, and he and Francine are off to go deal with something. And then Amanda's trying to get the ladies settled, and she goes to pick up Nadine's suitcase, and she picks it up for her like, "You're not touching my case." She's like, "Okay, then let's go this way." Like, awkward. Jen Sung seems very matronly, like motherly and nice.
Yeah, she doesn't seem super, like,
harsh.
Suspicious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, hardened and jaded. Yeah. Yeah, jaded and stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nadine's, at first, you get that sense that she's more like that, like the jaded.
Definitely.
But then she kind of softens later, too. Spoiler alert.
Mm-hmm.
So then we got all three of the spies there, and Francine's whipping through the system, trying to pull up the information to find out where those codes originated from, tracking numbers. And it's an L7 system. And Lee's like, how do you know about this system? And he goes, it's not that big of a secret. And he goes, there aren't so many secrets, Scarecrow. Like, anytime any of them can get a jump on the other, they're just all there for it.
Yeah.
It epitomizes like that man, macho, over the top, manly thing that they do, the pissing contest.
Mm-hmm.
So Francine pulls it up and says, hey, here's the lot number, Ron's mom's cornbread. It was manufactured January 15th at a mill in Des Moines, and it looks like it shipped to Denver Distribution House. And then it was donated to an international relief organization called Food for Flight. So this is where that plays in. It's headquartered in LA, and Randall Schuyler is the man that's in charge of it all. And so Billy's like, all right, that means your destination's LA, and I'll get it all set up and we'll get your covers in place. And he goes, you know, make yourselves comfortable and get good luck. So he and Francine are staying in Washington. Billy's like, you can handle this, Scarecrow. Just make yourself dispassionate. Yeah, that'll happen.
Compartmentalize.
Yeah, and he's like, remember what's on the line here. And Lee's like, reluctantly, like, yeah, okay. So Amanda's standing there, kind of catching it on. He's like, Amanda, I don't think I have to tell you how important you'll be to this assignment. Lee has trained for years developing finely tuned instincts, and every one of them will be telling him to get the best of Petrovich and Chang before they get the best of him. She's like, yes, sir, but he's very responsible. He's like, it's not the question. Self-control is. He goes, you know him better than any of us. Use your instincts, keeping him on an even keel. She goes, there won't be any problem. Okay, you guys, when I was watching this, I started like totally laughing out loud. And I was like, like Billy's like, keep an even keeled. Like if you have to give him a blowjob, like do whatever you need to do.
Keep that temperament even.
Just keep him happy. You know, if you got to give him a hand job, whatever you need to do, just do it. I was laughing because I was like, I could picture us talking about this. Like, geez, Billy, what do you want her to do, you know?
Yeah, whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink, say no more. She goes, I really don't think there will be any problem. He goes, well, if this task force falls apart, so will our relationships with every superpower that has the bomb. It might be the beginning of something we may not be able to control. She says, yes, sir. Now, in the script, it's a little bit different. He goes, Amanda, you're here because no one else is qualified. She goes, I don't think I understand, sir. He goes, Amanda, there's nothing to be a lot of, it must mean, there's going to be a lot of pressure on Lee. He's working with two people he has trained, was trained to cross up at every turn. He's going to be paranoid, tense, and in need of a partner he can trust. And Amanda says, I'll do my best, sir. And Billy says, there's no one else better qualified for the job. And she says, thank you, sir. He goes, I think you know what's at stake. And Amanda says, yeah, the fate of our entire economic, political, and military relationship with the Chinese and Russians. Yeah, no pressure.
Right. I like the way that's worded better, though.
Yeah. Yeah, that is interesting. Now, Amanda's got a bigger task at hand than probably Lee does, because she's got to keep him calm, which we know is not going to be an easy thing to do. So they're all on their way to L.A., they're already there. Spoiler alert. Chang is walking through the very large plane. This is like the largest plane I've ever seen.
Yeah.
The thing must be like
so wide.
Oh my God. It's like the size of two airplanes wide, you know?
Yeah.
It's huge. So Amanda's reading a book sitting on the couch, and Lee comes passing by all cocky, and he's got a pack of cigarettes, and he's like, oh, Chang, you forgot these. And Chang pulls out his cigarettes. He goes, nope, these are mine. He goes, oh, well, then I guess this little bug isn't yours either. He goes, nope. And he goes, oh, I'll just hold on to it until somebody can claim it then. It's like, he's so, Lee's so on it. He probably already went around with checking for bugs and everything. I mean, why would you even try to do that? You know you're going to get caught.
Just to play like their little mind games, you know, like they have to play nice, but they don't have to play like super nice.
They don't
like,
have to play clean.
They can play dirty.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah.
That's kind of funny.
Yeah, he probably figured he'd find it, just like mess with him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He goes, I don't believe those are mine. He goes, oh, really? Well, then I guess the bug that was inside it isn't yours either. I'll just have to keep an eye on until someone claims it. He goes, how considerate of you.
Right.
And then Petrovich calls him over and he's playing chess. And again, this literally is a chess game. This whole episode is a chess game between these three guys.
Yeah.
And he's like, Lee comes over and Petrovich is like, our friend Chang still has his little bug collection, I see. And he's like, he's got more bugs than the Mormons had locusts. I thought that was funny. So there, he's playing chess by himself, I guess. And he's like, may I? He's like, sure, go ahead. And so they're talking about the food organization. And it's interesting because it's all about perspective. Because Petrovich is like, yeah, I asked back home, I asked about this organization. And I'm told it's a group of decadent Americans trying to exploit the starving victims of American imperialism. And he's like, check. And Lee goes, oh, well, that's funny. He goes, Washington tells me that they're a dedicated group of Americans trying to feed and care for the starving victims of Soviet political agitation. It sure makes you wonder, doesn't it? And it's like, they just want to stick it to each other. And one does it. And then the other one gets even further in. It's just,
mm-hmm.
And then Lee makes one move and he's like, checkmate. Like, see ya, sucker.
Well, the thing that sort of, and maybe this is coming from someone who had a brother who played competitive chess. When he got up there, the chessboard was already, like, the guy was playing by himself. Like,
right.
I was like, start at the beginning. I realized you wouldn't be able to say check, and checkmate is part of the story, but come on!
Yeah, he made one move, and it's over. It's like, oh, come on. That's not how, yeah, that thing usually takes hours.
At least one move is checkmate. Like, yep. Come on. Yep.
That's funny.
They're just getting to the good part.
Yeah, they just skipped the whole beginning of the match.
Yep. So Cocky Lee now goes back and sits down next to Amanda. He sits awfully close. She moves her purse and he just sits right down next to her, like shoulder to shoulder.
Maybe that's what it, season 3, because he's sitting so close to her.
Yeah, yeah, maybe.
Trouble?
It was past history. It's a job that's got to be done. Listen, Billy's worried about me, isn't he?
No.
Come on.
Oh, no.
He wants you to keep an eye on me, make sure I don't single-handedly destroy Detente.
Oh, come on, don't be silly.
Huh? That's okay.
Just kiss her.
I'm glad you're here. Friendly face makes a difference.
Oh, thank you very much.
Get a little closer.
Now don't be shy. You can get a little closer. Oh, that's right. I was thinking it was a bubblegum commercial, and it's not.
No.
Okay, so here's one of the funnier parts of the show. Okay, first things first, though, that Cupid doll hair thing going down her face looks horrible. Francine's. It's like this curly thing. It's at 12:51. It's like a curly cue, like a Cupid doll, you know, right down her head right there.
It's such like a perfect little ringlet, though.
Yeah, but it looks weird because it's just like one little curl coming down. It looks like a Cupid doll.
I don't hate it.
Okay.
I don't hate it.
All right. So this is funny, though, because Billy's sitting there with a Walkman. For those of you who are young, Walkman, you would put a tape in it, and it would play music on your head.
Novel.
A cassette tape.
We've talked about this before, but I never had a Walkman, but I did have, like, the portable radio, you know, that was, it wasn't, like, the cassette.
Oh,
thing,
okay.
But I had the radio version.
Just a radio.
Okay. Yeah, it was just a radio, and then I had a CD player.
Okay, know, like, I did have the CD player, and I would go out running with it, and then it
was... A CD player, and you would run with it?
Uh-huh. Wow. I had to have it in my hand, and I would run, and then if I hit the ground too hard, it would skip, and then...
I was going to say... You had to get a really, really good one with an anti-skip if you had to exercise.
Which I did. This was right when Nora Jones came, hit the scene. Because I would always listen into that album.
I did it in college. So 93 and 94.
Yeah, this was like 2005-ish.
Oh, no, wait, sorry. That would have been high school. So it was 97 and 98 is when I did it.
Yeah. And then one time it was like really icy and I hit the ground, slipped on the ice, and then I went sprawling and the CD player went flying and it scratched it all up. Yeah, it was not good. But anyways, Billy is listening to them on his, is listening to a Randall Skyler song, Barbed Wire Love. And he's like, you know, when you have the headphones on, remember when, when Jamie had his on and he's like, Mom, what are you going to be doing? You like talk really loud because you have headphones on. You can't hear yourself. Mm-hmm. So you go louder. And, that's what Billy's doing. He's like talking really loud to her. And she's like, oh, she puts it on and she's like, oh, right, Barbed Wire Love. Mm-hmm. It's like you just automatically.
But what he says to her is so, no wonder she's like, oh, what's happening right now?
Your boss is talking dirty to you.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I don't think I'd like my boss to be telling me those things.
No.
She's like, here's the thing. She goes, Billy. And he goes, wrap me up in barbed wire, show me your love. And she's like, what? Slip your arms around me like a heavy metal glove. And she's like, Billy, what are you talking about? He goes, I don't know. I know I'm a little older. I understand that tastes change. She goes, but this, Randall Skyler's latest album, and she puts it on. She, of course, knows what it is. She's like, oh, right.
The relief.
Yeah, right. So I do want to point out, Martha had mentioned before, and I can't remember where she did, but she mentioned that her and Mel shared a trailer, and so he always played his jazz music, and she always played like rock and roll kind of stuff, heavy metal, rock and roll kind of music that she'd always liked. And so they would battle because one would want that kind and one, and they're very, very different, obviously. And she said, you know, they would kind of compromise. He'd introduce her to something and then she'd introduce him to something. So it's kind of reminds me of that whole little dynamic between the two of them, but in real life. It's kind of cute.
Yeah.
So she explains, you know, she's like single gold, 13 million albums. The album is about to go triple. And he goes, people are paying money for this? It's like so typical of an older, you know, from the older generation of the new music that's coming out. Mm-hmm. Like, really?
What I could hear that he was listening to, I'm right there with him. It sounds awful.
I'm sure they just paid somebody just to make up a fake bad song or something, you know?
Oh, it was awful. It was I agree with Billy.
That was back in the day when they actually sold albums, you know, not just downloads, right? So they would make, they would make a lot more, they would sell a lot more albums first off. And it was before the sharing with like Napster and stuff like that, you know? So she says, yeah, he's already made $10 million on that album and that he's donating $1 for every album sold to Food for Flight. So he's doing good things, you know? And he says, you know, she says on paper, it looks, you know, like it's a legit thing.
It's like a Live Aid spinoff.
Okay. So see, now I'm looking more, I can see more closely to her sweater that she's wearing that watermelon look color. I don't know what color, it's kind of like reddish orange and it's got like perforations in it. It's actually kind of cute. And then the little shirt, the little bow tie shirt is like black and white polka dots.
Yeah.
Or it's white with black polka dots. It's really cute. I don't hate it. I'm shocked.
I don't hate them individually, but with the jacket, with the skirt, it's just very heavy. I would say like a cute pair of like, what is it? A pant, P-O-N-T-E, whatever those pants are.
Oh, I don't know.
I think with that, it could be like super cute, but it's just all a little heavy. But for an 80s outfit, no problem.
Yeah.
No worry. Yeah. I like it.
I think it's kind of cute. I think her makeup's on a little heavy there, but it's cute.
Mm.
I don't like the curly cute thing, but
I do like her earrings too. I know they're like pretty big and red, but they're like pretty blingy and I do like that.
From the angle I'm seeing, it's hard to see what they are.
I thought they were jingle bells at first, but they're not.
They kind of drop a little funny. It's hard to tell what they are. But I don't hate it. It's growing on me.
Yeah.
She's saying that it's one of the most effective relief organizations around, which that's saying a lot because there were a lot back then. And he's the face for the group, and there's a woman named Pam Gentry. She's the brains behind the administration. She does PR. Now she's putting together. Nobody's making a lot of money, and matter of fact, most of the workers are volunteers. And it's all pretty impressive, she says. He goes, and big. It's like looking for a needle in a haystack with one arm tied behind your back. He goes, why do we have to go tiptoeing around this? And then the phone rings. Oh, they're like a jeweled earring. Oh, those are cute. I just saw it. She just tilted it a certain way.
So, I do like them.
Billy gets a call. And by the way, he stands up straight and is all rigid and says, calls him sir and yes, sir. And yes, mister, Mr. President. Then you kind of get the sense that he's talking to old Ronnie, and he's telling the president that they're doing everything according, and he gets interrupted, and he's like, I see. Yes, sir.
They never actually named the president just the president. Like, it's,
yeah,
that was the president.
Right.
Like, I mean,
they've alluded to him a couple of times. So if you remember season one, episode one in the pilot, she says, Nancy R. doesn't boil an egg without Mrs. Welch, right? So that's the first time they kind of allude to him. And then the second time is the one we just posted, which is Sour Grapes, when they say that the president's roots are in California, which Ron Reagan was raised in California. Yeah. So that's kind of where, in this one, this is one of the few times they don't say anything other than it's the president and the first lady.
Just the president, yeah.
So it could be anybody, but the other ones, they've kind of alluded that it's Ron Reagan without saying it. So he's trying to assure the president that they're working through it and they're going to be successful. And he goes, that was the president. He just put a lot more powder in our powder keg. Get lean, Amanda.
It sort of makes you feel like Billy is more important than you maybe had thought in the past.
Yeah, like, the president's calling him direct.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, that's not the first time either.
Makes me feel like he's a special dude.
Well, he is.
Is our Billy.
We all know him as being a special dude. So now they've just landed at the airport. And so they're all getting up from the conference table and they're like, all right, let's go. Now, we all know in the episode, they don't all go, right? But in the script, they all go. It's a little different. All six of them head out and it's like, just seems a little odd that they're all going. I mean, like, it's not like four people. It's six people. That's a lot of people to be driving around.
I hope they rented a van.
Right. Yeah. And that's what that's what they did. They have a van that they are in, and it's carrying all of them.
That's great.
No joke.
They have to.
Redlands, California. Day establishing. Peaceful rolling hills of rural Northern California. A sign reads, Welcome to Redlands, California. A van carrying the agents and their aides with a driver drives by a mailbox which reads, Ned and Virginia Osterhaus, and pulls into the yard, stopping in front of a huge semi-truck. Lee gets out, followed by Chang and Petrovich. Lee says, why don't you all stay here? I'll handle this. Petrovich says, no, we will handle this together. Lee says, look, you're not American. What do you know about truckers? Chang says, you're not Chinese, but you had no trouble with the Tibetan sheep herders. And Petrovich says, or Russian ballerinas. They head toward the house. On the spot, he goes, that was professional field work. And Amanda gets out of the car, sensing Lee's frustration. Chang says, and what is this? Our background reports on Mr. Osterhaus are very detailed. Amanda says, Lee, I'm sure Mr. Melrose wouldn't mind. Lee says, Mr. Melrose isn't here. He walks off, angry. Amanda says, oh boy. As Amanda catches up with Lee, we cut to the Osterhaus front porch. Ned is a wiry, good old boy. Virginia Osterhaus is a frumpy little housewife. Lee is sitting next to him. Chang and Petrovich are standing nearby. We see Amanda at the edge of the porch. Nadine and Jin keep a more respectable distance. This is really weird, you guys. This whole scene is. So hang on.
Sounds like it.
Yeah. Ned, who's suspicious, says, your union, eh? And Lee says, yes, sir, we are. And Ned says to Chang, how long you been a teamster? Chang says, long time. Ned says, now how come I don't believe you? Petrovich says, perhaps because you don't want to. Lee says, Mr. Osterhaus, the union sent us here to investigate a complaint against you about a missing shipment of cornbread. Ned says, you got the wrong guy. Chang says, Ned Osterhaus, your wife is Virginia. You purchased this house in 1978. You owe $58,000 on your truck. Oh, and you're friendly with a waitress on I-80 just outside of, and Ned, cutting him off, says, I think I've had enough. Ned exchanges a concerned look with his wife. Amanda sees that Virginia is concerned. Ned says, and I don't think I want you fellas on my front porch anymore. Nice of you to drop by. Ned exits into the house. Virginia turns to them and then finds Amanda's sympathetic face. Of course she does. Virginia says, he's a good man, really. I'll talk to him. She disappears into the house. Now it's Amanda's turn to be angry. She steps forward. Amanda says to Chang, that was cruel and unnecessary. Chang's indifferent and says, we are struggling to maintain world peace, Mrs. King. It was necessary to punch his buttons. Lee, through his teeth, says, what's the matter with you two? And Petrovich says, you Americans, you treat people like children. Sometimes you must bend them a little, make them talk. Lee says, not here, not on our ground. Nobody's bending anyone. After a beat, I want 10 minutes alone with him. That's an order. The force of Lee's comment isn't lost on Petrovich and Chang. They nod agreement. Petrovich says, fine, if you fail, I'll just need 2 minutes. Petrovich marches off to the car. Chang dryly says, the Russians are so indelicate. Shrugs. C'est la guerre, n'est-ce pas? I don't know what that means. I'm sure I butchered it, but it's French. Chang exits.
N'est pas, right?
N'est pas? Okay, yeah, what does that mean?
N'est pas. It's c'est la guerre, n'est pas? Yeah. Is that what it says?
Mm-hmm.
Some, guerre, I think, is war.
So goes war, probably.
If you say je ne sais pas, and it says n'est pas, mm-hmm. I think it's...
Isn't that
right?
Speak.
Isn't that so?
No, that's
n'est pas. It might be like that's war, right? Oh, something like that, maybe.
It's c'est la guerre, or mm-hmm. you know, whatever. That's war. It's a French expression.
That's war.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then Chang exits. He watches Lee go, then turns to Amanda. She smiles understandingly. She says, "You okay?" He says, "Yeah, just a little pumped up." She goes, you could have fooled me. Lee smiles. The heat of the moment lifted off his shoulders. Virginia steps out of the house, turns to Amanda. Could I talk to you alone? Lee looks at Amanda, nods, and walks off. Virginia sits down next to Amanda. Virginia says, I don't want those men to take my Ned away. Amanda says, he took the cornbread mix, didn't he? And Virginia nods. He didn't realize what he was doing. He was glued to that fundraising program on his last haul. She says, what program? She goes, that one on the radio and television all weekend. Food for flight down there in Los Angeles. He kept hearing about all those starving people and listening to that beautiful song. It tore his heart out. He just had to do something. That's the way Ned is. He's a good person. And she says, Amanda says, of course he is. Where's the cornbread now, Virginia? And then, reluctantly, she says, well, he changed his shipping reports and delivered the crate directly to the food airlift warehouse. She digs into her purse. I'm sorry. I have some money. I'll pay for the food. Amanda says, Mrs. Osterhaus, it's all right. I think you just paid us more than enough. On Virginia's quizzical look, they cut to... All the shades are drawn. They're on the airplane. All the shades are drawn. Petrovich is at the bar with a glass of vodka, absorbed in a small magnetic chessboard. Amanda, Nadine, and Jin are sitting together looking at photos from Amanda's wallet. She says, that's my mom, that's Jamie, and that's Philip. And Jin says sincerely, you are very lucky. Nadine takes a picture out of her purse and presents it. Jin and Amanda look at it. Jin says, she's not so lucky. Like, what's the picture of?
Brutal.
They don't even say.
I mean, at that point in the script, was it assumed that Nadine couldn't speak English still? Because if not, like, that's harsh.
It's assumed she doesn't speak English, so.
But okay. She just said that. But still.
Yeah, nice. So that whole thing, none of that happened where that trucker took the right. box of food. But all six of them went, like, it must have just been like a cluster, you know, the idea of having all those people.
Yeah.
You're going to be here, you're going to be here, then 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 you're going to be here. That's just so weird.
Would have been really chaotic.
Yeah.
Staging nightmare.
Yeah. And then in the script, that's when they go into Lee saying he found the cigarettes, you know, with the bug in it and all that. That plays out there after that. scene. Yeah. And then later, shortly after, Lee says to Amanda, I wanted to thank you again for your help at Ned's house. His wife gave us the first real clue we've had. She said, I didn't do much, Lee. Virginia was happy to get it off her chest. He goes, you listen, something Petrovich and Chang don't know much about. And Amanda, indicating a bug, she says, unless no one knows they are listening. And this is, again, right after that scene. And Lee says, yeah, well, all's fair in love and war. Let's get on the horn to Billy. He should have the book on Randall Schuyler, the rock and roller, who's the juice behind this food for flight group. And Amanda says, I don't believe that. Do you? That everything's fair? And Lee says, in which, love or war? She goes, just answer the question. He goes, no, I don't think everything's fair. And then a beat, in love or war. Beat. Especially love. There's a beat. Amanda nods. Aww. And Lee says,
oh, that's sad.
I know. And Lee says, I think we agree on a lot of things, Mrs. King. Lee and Amanda have moved closer together. What looks like an embrace coming up is thwarted. Of course it is. When they become aware of Nadine and Jin looking at them. Lee and Amanda smile self-consciously. And Amanda says, I'll get the communique off to Billy. She exits. As soon as she does, we glimpse the hint of good-natured smile on Nadine's face as Lee sheepishly reacts. How cute would that have been? Isn't that cute?
Why are they going to steal those scenes from us?
I know. Damn them. Anyways, I thought that was cute. It was that's the nice payoff for that long diatribe I just read to you guys. Sorry. None of it would have made sense otherwise.
That's cute.
Yeah, sweet. Okay, so let's get caught back up in the thing. They all go to leave, and then Amanda pulls on Lee's arm, and she's like, we seem to be forgetting somebody. We seem to be leaving somebody behind. And Lee's like, Petrovich, what's going on here? He's like, she's going to file some files with Moscow. and then the other spies, he nods to Jin, and he's like, you go, you stay too. He goes, yeah, she's going to catch up on paperwork too. And then the guys start doing their little pissing contest again. And Amanda's like, excuse me, I have an idea. Why don't I stay here and the three of us will stay here and the three of you can go. She goes, then there'll be a balance. She goes, looks at him and they don't say anything. She goes, it's a good idea. And then they leave. I hate Lee's jeans.
Really? I hate the jacket.
I hate the jacket and I hate the jeans. The jeans are like dad jeans.
No, I like the jeans. I
knew you were going to say that.
I like the jacket. I love the dad jeans.
The jacket's like they took a parachute and then put it together into a jacket.
Yeah.
You can see through it and everything.
Yes. Yeah,
like,
but that's... was the time frame. He was supposed to be
Even for the time frame, I don't know what is going on with that jacket.
I'm totally sorry, those jeans are way too high on his waist, Lexi. How can you even like those?
They're such into the high-waisted jeans.
Yeah, I like
they're
a high waisted jeans.
They are so bad.
I'm with Lexi on this one.
The jeans are okay. If you had a darker jacket, it would be fine.
Yeah, but the jacket doesn't bother me either. The jacket is, that's totally 80s, and he was going to a rocker's house.
Okay, if we're talking about high waisted jeans, though, Randall's pants with the suspenders when they go to lean in—that's a bad pant. Okay, like where you can literally see it, like up his butt crack with like his tidy whities. That's a bad time. Lee looks great, and his butt in those jeans does not quit.
No,
Randall on the other hand needs some help because. Okay.
You need to look at 1636, please.
Yeah,
please pull up 1636. Those jeans are like cutting off his circulation in the crotch area. They are not attractive at all on him.
I like them.
Ugh. No. They are way too high.
I like my dad jeans. I think they're cute. Just like I like mom jeans. I think they're cute.
Do you? Oh, I hate mom jeans.
It depends on the body type of the person that's wearing them.
Yep. That's true.
I'm not a big light jeans for guys.
That not that color.
But But the style's okay, I think. But it's just the color and the...
I like it. Lexi's having like daydreams over there about those jeans.
No, I just think it like looks good. You know, I'm like sitting thinking about it.
I like the plaid.
Listen, especially compared to these other yahoos that he's around right now, like there's no comparison. He looks great, and I stand by that.
True. Respectfully submitted, Lexi Fema. It's the wrong person to be on, but Petrovich's army jacket is kind of cool. Just it doesn't look right on him. Just seems odd, out of place. They totally do not look like the press.
No.
The international press is
like
just
any sort of interviewers at all.
And I love how Petrovich is like kind of like, oh, yeah, barbed wire love. And he's like, oh, don't tell me you heard his stuff. He goes, I read an article once. It's like, God forbid you don't have a stick up your butt, you know?
You know,
he's probably been to the concert. He has to be like an arrogant SOB, you know?
Yep.
Oh, he's like, he appeared in Moscow once. I read a newspaper report on the performance. Disgusting. He goes, but it sold 10 million copies. He goes, ask around, you know? You may find a bootleg version in Moscow. Oh, here's the pants. Skylar's pants. So let me see.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah, they totally are up his ass. You're right. That's so funny.
Somebody got his size wrong.
You guys are the international dudes, right? And Lee's so funny. He goes, this is Isaac Peller and Bob Wang. It just seems so fake. He's like far out like two or three times in this episode. He's like the epitome of that 80s rocker, you know?
He's way less drugged out than all 80s rockers.
That's probably true. I do like how they mention
Band-Aid and Farm Aid
and Band-Aid and Live Aid.
Yeah.
That was a huge moment in my growing up. My older brothers were all watching it. We all stayed up watching the whole thing. It was really cool. Like all those
Live Aid?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was really cool. I like that. The performances were like out of this world.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Tina Turner and God, who was the guy that sang with her? Oh, Rolling Stones guy. Mick Jagger. And Tina Turner,
mm-hmm.
It's Only Rock and Roll. I still have that in my head, how they did that. It was amazing. That was great. So that's one of those things from childhood that totally is in my brain, like cemented in my brain. And I remember Phil Collins, he flew from England to Philadelphia. So he played on both continents
for the show.
It was really cool. So they
do
mention
still in Genesis then, right?
Oh, I don't know.
That was before he went solo.
I think so. Wasn't it? Isn't that Live Aid 85? Wasn't that in 85?
84, wasn't it?
You know, Lex, one of the workers there to the right of Lee, her pants are up her butt too. So maybe that's just what that look was back then.
To the right of Lee.
Yeah,
you were right. It was 1985.
Okay, I thought so.
It was my brother's. I couldn't remember. I remembered it was on my brother's birthday, but I didn't remember how old he was. Yeah, it was his fifth birthday.
What year? I mean, what day? What month and day?
July 13th.
Okay. I totally remember watching that like the whole way through. We all stayed up watching it and it was really cool.
I wasn't allowed.
Oh, it was really cool.
I was only 7.
Oh, you're such... Between you and Lex, man, I feel like an 80-year-old woman. You're only 3 years older than me. I mean, younger.
Yeah, so I was 8.
You were 8 because I was 11. Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I told you. I couldn't remember if it was 84 or 85. I remembered I was still like.
Young, yeah, you were still little. I'm a younger.
But I didn't get to watch the whole thing.
Yeah, so, like, my parents were gone for some reason, and my brothers were all staying up, so they let us stay up too. They probably shouldn't have, but we were. Anyways, so Lee's kind of taking Skylar off to the side, and he's like, you know, asking him how he first got involved in the airlift, and he's like, oh, man, I mean, look around you. He's kind of like that hippy dippy, you know, the world. Look at the world. We got to do something. He asked if he wants some chai chai, I think is what he said. Do you guys know what that is? It would look like a Mai Tai.
No, I don't know.
Don't know.
It's like it's got an umbrella in it and a bunch of like 10 different kinds of fruit. And he says chai chai. I don't know. Maybe that was a big thing back then. And then Lee says he offers him some and he goes, no, this is a working visit. So it must have alcohol in it, whatever it is. So then Petrovich asks, they'd like to know how his organization works. And he's got a camera, so you got to note that he's got a camera because he takes pictures while he's there, which later plays in later. I love that he's like, well, it's like it's simple, you know? Like, I put together a bunch of rock groups, and that raises more money in 1 weekend than Band Aid, Live Aid, and Farm Aid all combined. And then we, you know, feed the world. He goes, how do you plan to transport all these supplies? He goes, dig it, man. We got the U.S. Air Force. Lee's like, far out. So fake. He goes, I am putting together a takeoff gig. This show will knock your teeth out. He goes, you guys don't read the papers you write for? Like, I've been in front page news for a week. He goes, oh, yeah, yeah. He wants the rundown on the destination. He goes, everywhere, man. Asia, Africa, Mideast. And then Petrovich says, Pakistan? He goes, they got starving people? And he goes, sure. And he goes, we'll feed them. He's like, we got food. Listen, guys, to tell you the truth, that's not my department. He goes, you see, I'm the Flash. I put on the show and raise the money. I buy the food. And then he goes, I got people to do all the work. So he seems very legit. Like, he's not in it for anything other than probably notoriety. And, you know, probably I think he does want to help. But I mean,
yeah. He's in it for a good time.
Yeah. He's in it for a good time, but I think he's also like, you know, I do want to do some good things, but like, if no one was watching, would he be doing what he's doing? Probably not.
No way.
Yeah. He goes, I love the, like, what else do you need to know? Do I need to know? And then he calls over Pam Gentry. She seems like a go-getter. Doesn't she, though? I do want to nominate her as my second and final bad guy, bad girl, bad person, baddie. I don't know what we want to call that.
Baddie.
The baddie. Not baddie like B-A-T-T-Y, but like B-A-D-D-I-E.
I-E. Yeah.
Anyways, because, you know, we don't want to discriminate. Just because she's a woman doesn't mean she can't be a horrible, horrible human being. So sure. I'm nominating Pam Gentry as a evil baddie in SMK land for the finest awards.
Nice.
Respectfully submitted, Taya Johnston.
Vile villains?
Oh yeah, vile villains. Thank you. I am nominating Pam Gentry as a vile villain. We do not discriminate here at MKC. Thank you very much. I do like when she goes, hey, I got some great news. We got the first lady. And he goes, we got Roslyn? She goes, close. Like, dude. Or no, one of the guys says close. So he introduces the guys to Pam and says that they're press, and he's like, without this little cookie, I don't think I'd have a chance of pulling it off. She, like, really, would you say that about a guy? Without this little cookie, we wouldn't be able to
definitely
do this.
That's
so funny. Anyway, so he leaves them and they're left to kind of wander around, but Petrovich is taking pictures, and he gets a picture of Gentry, Pam Gentry, which will play in, like I said, it will play in later. But he doesn't seem to think that Skylar is, you know, mixed up in the bad side of this. Why do bad guys and girls, ladies, women, vile villains, why do they, like, go, they don't even, like, go off to the side. They go over and pick up a phone. They're like, we got a problem. Like, when you go, like, back into the house and, like, hide and then be like...
Into her office, for example.
Yeah.
Shut the door and the blinds and make a private call.
Instead, be like, we got a problem. Like, there's people. They're right in front of me. They could probably hear me. And I'm telling you that they're bad.
The majority of the vile villains are not intelligent.
But she seems to be smart. But she does seem to be pretty smart. Obviously not smart enough.
And they have to hurry. They have to get her phone ASAP.
Yeah. Now she wants to kick things into gear. She's like, she calls a guy. You can hear him. He has a bit of an accent. And she says, we have a problem. He goes, I'm listening, Miss Gentry. And then we get back to the airport now. Amanda's on the phone. And she's talking to Lee and saying, Mr. Melrose wanted me to let you know a couple of things. And she kind of looks around, and the only person that's there is Nadine, but she doesn't speak English, right? So she won't hear anything. She says, it seems that the Indian government found out about the detonator, and they think that gives them justifiable reason to build up their nuclear arsenal. He goes, well, if they do, that could start an arms race throughout the continent. And that's the spark that could set the tinderbox off. He's at a payphone. They're at a taco stand. He goes, well, let's just hope Food for Flight pays some big dividends, huh? Fast. She goes, now look, that's another thing. It seems that it's one of Washington's favorite charities. And so there are a lot of senators' wives involved. So Mr. Melrose wants you make sure you have something before you make a move. Not only do we have the Russians and the Chinese to worry about, now we've got Capitol Hill. He goes, what else did he tell you? She goes, well, he said, good luck. You're gonna need it. Nadine's like on her like white on rice. She just rolls her eyes like, great. So now we're at a warehouse and Gentry is fighting with this guy. And she's saying, you know, these clowns aren't, they are, I am sorry, but they are not clowns. Maybe two of them are, but one is not. She says these clowns are not press. And he wants to move faster. And she says, we lost one detonator by moving too fast. So she's involved with a Pakistani guy that got caught between China and Afghanistan by the Chinese and the Russians. So now they have the other nine and they're waiting for the airlift and the cover. And he says, that's in 2 days. She goes, I'll work on moving it up. And you work on slowing down our reporters. He said he'll take care of it. Which I'm kind of, he found them pretty awfully quick. You know, He found them really, really quick. They're at a taco stand in the middle of California.
Because there's only one taco stand in all of California.
Exactly. So I don't know how he found them so quick. But they're sitting there getting food from there. They're sitting outside. That's a key moment to know. This decadent musician is a waste of time, Petrovich says. And he says, I disagree. Skyler's operation is dirty somehow. It's a good lead. He goes, bikinis, barbed wire, love, and chi-chis do not qualify as the lead, Cheng says. He says, precisely. Just what are you concealing from us? He goes, I'm not concealing a damn thing. You two know as much as I do. And they're getting very skeptical of him. He goes, Food for Flight is getting ready to send out 50 tons of foods. Those 9 detonators could get lost in any one of those shipments very easily. And Cheng says, that's just conjecture. And he goes, no, it's an educated guess. Meow. He goes, then we must move, cordon off the warehouse, interrogate the personnel, bend those people. He really wants to bend people. And Lee's like, slow down. It's funny because now Lee's the one who's Mr. Man of Action. Now he's got to slow everybody else down, you know?
He's the reasonable one in this group, I guess.
Right, which is a different turn.
Scary.
Right? That's what I mean. It's like, ooh, if he's in charge.
He did say that they were cold-blooded killers.
So. Yeah, that's true. And we know Lee isn't that.
Right.
He goes, we're not even sure those detonators are anywhere near the place. I'm not going to risk scaring those people off by sending the Marines charging into the warehouse. He goes, so what do you suggest? More discussions? More strategy sessions? He goes, our best bet is to focus on the warehouse. Set up surveillance teams and wait. He goes, I'm telling you right now, Stetson, we should go in there. And he goes, look, why don't you just shut up and eat your taco, huh? Shut your pie hole. In the script, it's slightly different where he says, what do you suggest, Mr. Stetson? More discussions, more strategy sessions. And Lee says, our best bets to focus on the warehouse, set up surveillance points around it and wait. And then Cheng says, there's a saying in the province where I was born. The leopard who sleeps loses his spots. For once, I agree with the Russian. We must act. And Lee says, we used to have a saying where I'm from, Cheng, shoot first and ask questions later. It doesn't work. Petrovich says, tell that to your agency. Man, these guys don't like each other.
Very spicy.
Very, very, very spicy, yeah.
They spent a long time being spicy against each other, so yeah. It makes sense.
True. Their instincts, yeah. All right, so they're sitting there talking and getting all pissy at each other. And then we see that the other guy that was hanging out with Gentry. And he pulls up and he's looking right across there. And he times it just so, of course, where he runs this lady who's driving into right where they're sitting. And she plows right through it. Luckily, Lee pushes them all out of the way. And then the bad guy runs off. Oh my gosh, I just saw it. Gas in California was 95 cents a gallon. Oh my God, that's hilarious.
Crazy.
Yeah.
That was cheaper, or that was more expensive than here for sure.
Oh, I'm sure it was. It was probably like 80 cents back in Michigan, at least.
I was going to say, yeah. Because it was, by the time I started driving, like 10 years later, it was only 95 cents here.
Wow. Wow. So now the guys come running back to the, rushing back to the airplane. You hear them yelling at each other before they even show themselves. And he's like, that was a no accident, Stetson. And he goes, oh, brilliant deduction, Sherlock. He goes, now we're getting too close and someone can't stand the heat, which is nothing. This is unacceptable. Nadine. So he starts speaking Russian, saying he wants her to get on the console there. He said, this game of cat and mouse is over. I'm contacting the general secretary to recommend I come back to Moscow or take unilateral action. And they're like nose to nose. And Lee says, you do that, you're going to have to go over me. And I guarantee you it will not be easy or pleasant. And I put in the script when I read that, I was like, I don't know about that. That might be kind of pleasant to go through him. Come on, no one else was thinking that.
No, but I sort of wish I was.
Chang, in the script, Chang says, power is the last resort of the powerless, Mr. Stetson. The mood in the room is tense, near the flashpoint. Amanda can't keep from jumping in. And she says, excuse me, but we are here trying to find a way to avert World War III, and all we're managing to do is trip over each other's egos. Shouldn't we try to get back to business? So it's kind of like that. She says, she jumps up. We're supposed to be stopping World War III. You're letting your egos get in the way. I suggest you get back to business. She goes, excuse me. And he goes, thank you for your words of wisdom, Mrs. King. And she's like, you're very welcome. She was very snarky to him, as I would be too.
I'm still stuck. Power is the last resort of the powerless? Is that what he
says? That's what he says in the script. Yeah, Lee says, you're going to have to move over me. And I guarantee you that won't be easy or pleasant. And then Chang says, power is the last resort of the powerless, Mr. Stetson. Meaning probably coming across
using
as very...
using force.
Yeah, is because you can't get your way by doing it in the smart right way, I guess, maybe. I'm not sure.
That's kind of what
I figured it was, but...
I feel like it's a Chinese proverb that got lost in translation.
You're probably right.
It feels very... Was it Sun Tzu? what's the name of the... It's the Art of War.
The Art of War. Yep.
Okay, I'm done now. Sorry.
No, it's fine.
Tangent's done.
So then we see Jin comes out and she says, you know, she kind of tells Chang to shut the hell up, which was nice. And she starts telling him where to go. And so then Lee's like, oh, so you're a spy too. And she says, I'm Colonel Jen Sung. And she says, she admits that she's an attaché to the premier and Chang's superior. And she kind of gives him a look like, you best sit down and shut up. And then Petrovich is like, oh, of course. And she's like, but I'm no agent. She goes, from your words of wisdom, Mrs. King, I assume you're his superior. She goes, no, I'm no agent. I'm civilian auxiliary. She's just smart, that's all. She goes, ours is a joint effort, but it lacks direction. This is your country. We will trust your instincts. Agreed? And then he goes, duh, reluctantly. Nadine's picking up everything. So he's like, all right, I suggest we get into that organization. And then Amanda has a great idea, and it actually is... a good idea, but it keeps the other two women back at the plane, so we don't have too many people running around, but it gets her mixed in with the other guys, and that's that she would be somebody that people would overlook because she's just looks like a normal volunteer. She's done a million of those volunteer things. She doesn't look like a spy. She doesn't look like you know, a Russian or a Chinese person. So she's just like a typical white chick that she would fit right in there. And no one would be the wiser. So she'll get in and get the information that they need. Lee doesn't seem super excited about it, but then he kind of realizes that like this is their only chance probably to get that information. So he agrees. She's like, a lot of people there. There was hardly any danger at all. And I fit right into any kind of charity event. I've done so many. She goes, I'm the one for the job. Now we are back in Beverly Hills. You know how I know there was a sign that said Beverly Hills. Big mansion. And now we're back at the pool with Skylar. He's got different pants on and no suspenders, Lex, so you'll be happy.
Yeah.
I kind of like Pam Gentry's little, that big shirt.
Me too.
It's kind of cool.
Amanda's carrying the biggest envelope I've ever seen.
I know. I didn't even know they made them that big. You're right.
You can put a dead body in there.
Why do you know that? So Amanda's just kind of following them along so she can hear them. And she's just kind of folding t-shirts, kind of eavesdropping. Not kind of. She's eavesdropping on them and listening to what they're saying. Pam wants to up the schedule and have it happen a lot faster. And he's like, no, you know, we need to wait for the press. And he wants to build the excitement and have everything as it's scheduled. He's upset because he doesn't want to lose any of the press that he could get that would make it even a bigger event than it already is.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just doing it because she wants to get the detonators out of there before someone finds them. She goes, we got reports there's a weather front blowing in that could ground the planes for weeks. She's like, do you want to feed hungry people or not? He goes, hey, we'll keep a wet finger in the air, huh? That's gross. And he actually licks it too. And he goes, we'll see what happens. She goes, well, thousands die. He goes, Pamela, baby, hunger's been happening for centuries. I mean, what difference is a couple more days going to make? And she's like, maybe the cover of Rolling Stone. He goes, maybe, if it helps our cause. He goes, what's the matter with that? Hey, we're going to wait, okay? So he puts his foot down and says, we're not rushing it. Very clearly. And then she calls over one of the workers and says, we're rolling tomorrow morning at 8:30 sharp. You know, let's load as many trucks as we can tonight and then bring in the crew at 4:30 in the morning to finish. Keep this quiet. So Amanda's like totally like leaned over, like totally listening to what she's saying. And Pam kind of catches her and gives her an evil eye. So then Amanda goes right back to the airport and fills everybody in. So now they're going to head to the warehouse because now they have to find those detonators before they're gone. Because once they're out of the airspace, that's it. They're not going to be able to get them. So they do know that Pam Gentry's involved for sure. Do you like this jacket better now, guys? The black one. This man has more jackets than anyone I know. I'm not kidding. That's true. He has so many.
This is a stealth jacket for creeping around for dead
I've got a stealth jacket. I've got one that's made of a parachute. I've got a black leather one. I got a blue leather one. I got a gray leather one. I got a brown leather one. So Lee goes to the cabinet and pulls out, is it a Geiger counter?
Yes.
Yeah. Geiger counter. Mm-hmm. And they happen to have three of them. And he's like, this will give off if there's anything radioactive, it'll give it off and they'll be able to find them in there.
But are the detonators radioactive or are they detonating a nuclear bomb?
The detonators were probably around that. And that's how they picked up. He's saying they'd probably pick up a trace of that, maybe, I guess. Because, right, it's just a detonator.
Maybe. I'll go with that line of thought.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't deal with all that stuff. So her hair's up cute in a banana clip. Do you guys remember those banana clips? Man, I had a bunch of those. And you'd be sitting there wearing
You had really curly hair, right? So
yeah, they would stay up.
Yours would stay in. Mine tended to fall out, but... If I did my hair the right way, yes, I love my banana clips.
They're
I
so actually cute.
Still had one.
Do you?
Until a few years ago.
Wow.
It broke. The last one that I had broke just after I moved into the new house. So 3 or 4 years ago. But yeah, I kept them. I had them all. I loved them until they all broke on me.
Oh, yeah, totally. And then you would have these big bangs and then you would have your whole sides all up. Yeah. But it's now swept up and she's got the side sweep on the bangs. So it's not as cute as the first scene with her in it, but with her hair up and the ponytail, but it's still cute. So she gets in the warehouse and lets him in.
It's funny that Amanda brought her suburban spy jacket with her, the blue with the flap.
Especially in California. Like, it can't be that cold in there.
That's her famous jacket.
Yeah.
You know?
She wore that in season 2 even. So I like how they reuse her stuff and Lee gets a new jacket every episode.
But she has the same stuff. She's packing hers in that suitcase. She takes her stuff out, you know, really working it.
So she's on she's the lookout and then she kind of wanders in and they're all looking and then Petrovich seems to have another planet altogether. And he sneaks over to what we find out is Pam Gentry's office and goes inside. And he leaves her a little prize to get when in the morning. Isn't that nice of him? But little does he know, Amanda's watching him. And she goes in and finds it. And then obviously narcs on him.
Oops.
She looks really cute. Her makeup is flawless on this one. So yeah, so she sees that he's putting a bomb under her desk and it's set for 8 a.m. And then she sneaks off so he doesn't see her. And then he goes back to looking for the detonators. He had to get his work done first. So she sneaks in and finds it. She just pulls it right out of there and is like, I'd be afraid if I touched it, it would blow up in my face.
Yeah.
Yeah, it did seem a little, I don't know, out of character for her to do that.
Yeah. So as soon as she finds it, she pulls it out. And then we slip back to the airport in the airplane. And she's just sitting there kind of like in the chair like, yeah, you got some splaining to do there, Mr. Russian man. And Billy's reading him the riot act. And he explains that he took that picture that he had of her, of Gentry, and sent it to Moscow. And they found out that they ID'd her. And she was involved in, he goes, Mr. Stetson, our government have different priorities. He goes, damn it all, there was only one priority here, and that is those detonators. Now, what were you up to? He goes, I sent photos of Pam Gentry to the KGB. They identified her as an arms dealer who has been operating in the Mideast for years, especially Afghanistan. She disappeared 2 years ago, the same time those detonators were stolen, Lee adds. Not a coincidence, I'm sure. Miss Gentry is much sought after enemy of the state. He goes, yeah, well, now she's a much sought after enemy of the world. So he had his own desires. His bosses, I guess, had their own desires to get rid of Pam Gentry altogether. But it would have jeopardized this whole operation, which is stupid. Short-sighted of them, for sure. Okay, I just noticed Nadine's outfit. It's kind of cute. Far away. Maybe it's not. When they're at 3051.
That's what I said. I thought, like
you thought, all of them were cute. Like,
I thought they did pretty good with all the costuming for this.
Yeah, Jin's little blue jumper's cute, too.
Yeah, I liked her jumper a lot.
Yeah,
for
that's
sure.
Cute, and it's a pretty color on her. But Nadine's, I just noticed.
Skirt suit too.
Huh?
Jin's skirt suit that she wears in a minute too.
Okay.
I like that one as well.
I like this blue jumper, and I just noticed Nadine's outfit for the first time. It's really cute. I don't know what she's got on, like for pants or dress or bottom or anything, but the top's cute. Fashion time here on MKC. So they've got 3 years. 3 years. They have 3 hours to find the detonators. And I want to know something. How the hell? So Petrovich has a whole suitcase of those bombs in his suitcase. How the hell did he get them from Russia to there?
Good question.
He no literally idea. Had a whole suitcase full.
He bought it out here.
They have their own private jet. It's just
maybe that's interesting thought, but wouldn't he still have to go through customs?
He bought it when he got here.
Yeah, but they're Russian. They're Russian made ones, they said.
So he bought it when he got here. You don't think that there's Russian weapons in the US? I think there probably was in 1980.
Probably. Alright, so now we're at the warehouse where the detonators are. And they've got all 9 of the detonators in there, and they're double cushioned, airtight. And she pulls out these little seals for the door that have been, they're what is given from customs. And she said, well, they better look real. I paid enough for them. So she paid money to get those. And so now they're ready to go. And he's saying, you'll be a very rich lady. She's like, peace on earth. How evil can you be? See, this is why she's a bad baddie. She's a vile villain. She's vile. She knows what's going to happen, and she still lets it happen.
She just doesn't care.
She doesn't care. She's getting money. So Lee and Amanda show up at Skyler's, and the lady's trying to put hairspray on him, and he goes, stop, it makes my teeth itch. How do your teeth itch?
Might need to see a doctor for that.
I know, right? So he's got somebody doing his hair and makeup and everything, and he's just kind of like, ugh. And Lee and Amanda show up, and Lee's like, he goes, hey, my press buddy. He goes, you're going to miss the most important thing. The food flight caravan is going. It's going to blow your mind. He goes, I'm hip. He goes, where's Pam Gentry? He goes, you mean Miss Machiavelli? She's flown the coop. And Amanda said, where's she go? He goes, I mean, like, totally bizarre. First she pushes the departure date up to this morning after I told her, like, absolutely no way. Then she conveniently forgets to clue me to the change, and that's very weird. He goes, the woman is obviously into some heavy stuff. And then Lee pulls out his ID, his agency ID, and he goes, what do you want me to say? He goes, everything you know about her. And then he goes, whoa. He goes, Candy, in the car. He finally realizes, he's like, what's happening, man? He goes, Pam Gentry is using Food for Flight to smuggle nuclear detonators out of the country. He goes, far out.
Some power trip.
Now that's a power trip. And then it just ends. So now we have all the truck drivers are getting their routes and they're splitting up. And poor truck number 52, he doesn't know what's coming. She gets into the truck before the driver does and sneaks in the back. And then she pulls out a knife and takes care of him. So she's going to be driving around with a dead guy in her vehicle?
Yep.
Ew. Vile villain. That's the vile villain for you. I'm really yep. selling this one.
That's what those big envelopes are for.
Nice. Way to circle back on that, Jen. Excellent. Excellent job. So now we're at where they're going to be sending all these trucks out to deliver all the food now. And Skylar's, you know, really selling it. They've got all kinds of people there. And he's just making a whole big thing of it. And they're all excited about it. They got balloons and hats and buttons and lots of blondes. Lots of blondes. Blonde
women. And then Lee and Amanda pull up in my other
that's
favorite
right.
car, Hunter car.
Yeah, the green one.
I think they just decided to borrow it from that set for the day.
You think? You think it's the same one?
Sure looks like Hunter car.
They use it again. They use it in, they used it, although they blew it up in that episode. They have it in Vigilante Mothers, remember? That same car.
Yep. It's probably not, but yeah, it's a classic.
It's a classic for sure. Now, Randall's getting everybody pumped up and the press is there. Lee pulls up in, Lee and Amanda pull up in the green machine and they're singing a song and he's meeting all the rest of the team there.
He's supposed to be like this huge superstar.
And that's all there's there.
Crowd he can draw.
I know.
I mean, come on. Yeah. I mean, I know you don't want to pay the extras, but give me a break.
Well, somehow, I don't know how, but Francine's hair got bigger. She's in a navy outfit now, which looks really nice. And it's got like a green pinstripe to it, like a piping to it. It looks like a dress. Pretty simple, but it's cute. But her hair is much larger than it has been the whole episode. Somebody comb that baby out. So Lee's trying to shut down the airlift and Billy's saying that would take a call to the White House. He goes, I'll need something concrete before I can do that. Lee says, damn it, we're running out of time. The caravan's due to leave in 15 minutes. He said he can shut down everything west of the Mississippi, but you got to get him something. He goes, in other words, we're on our own. And then Petrovich sneaks up to him on his driver's side left there and says, as we have been this entire mission. And Lee says, the last time you did that, you almost caught a bullet, pal. You know he's mad when he says pal. Nadine is there with him, and he's telling him that the colonel and Jin and Chang are at the airport with the reporters. Petrovich is saying, what do you suggest we do since your agency is so reluctant to act? And Amanda starts getting snippy again. She's like, everybody's doing the best they can. This caravan's going to move out here any minute. I suggest we stick to business. So what's going to happen is Petrovich is going to be in the front of the caravan and then Lee's going to be at the end so they can keep an eye on the flow of the trucks coming through. And then Lee says to have Amanda and Nadine stay behind and see if Gentry comes back. So Amanda just kind of does some hand gestures to get Nadine to come with her because, you know, Nadine doesn't speak English. They do mention about Hands Across the Water. It reminded me, do you guys remember in the 80s, Hands Across America?
Yeah, I remember.
Did you do it? My mom and I and my sister did it. Did you guys do it?
It came by us. I think we did.
Us too. We did it too. So we all held hands, Jen, and we didn't even know it.
Amazing.
Miranda, did you do it? Did you do Hands Across America?
I think we did. I think I was at school when we did it.
Oh, really? I thought it was on a weekend.
I don't know. Well, maybe we did it at the school, but maybe the long
okay.
week. I remember being in the school parking lot.
Okay. All right. I don't remember where we were.
Or I should say in front of the school parking lot because it was like down by towards the street. But anyway, I think, we did it.
Isn't that funny? We all were holding hands technically.
And we didn't know.
And we didn't even know. Lexi wasn't there yet.
Wasn't even a thought yet.
You weren't even a thought yet.
Well, that was that. That was 1986.
Was it really? Hands Across America. Oh, that's too funny. Yeah. All these memories like getting jogged from this episode.
Because I know it went through. Maybe I'm wrong. I remember going to the school for something. It may have been in Cincinnati that we actually did it. But yes, I'm pretty sure we were there.
Hmm.
I was young. I remember vaguely.
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 Skylar tells all of them to start their engines. All the trucks are going, and then they head off. And everybody's all excited. People start leaving and heading off. Skylar comes by and then he just starts making out with this lady. He totally kisses the stranger on the lips. Like, what the hell? So he gets in his limo and then they all follow him, all the trucks and everything. So the limo goes and then Petrovich and then the semis and then Lee's going to round up the end. Then after everybody's kind of gone and Amanda realizes that Pam's not going to show up there, she takes off and follows them, the rest of them. Which is a good thing because now Pam's driving truck number 52. We have to remember that. And now another truck 52 that's identical to the other one that Pam's driving is being driven by the other bad guy. And they're going to do a little switcheroo. And you guys remember this scene, area that they're going in, those tunnels there under the underpass. Those are used in lots of different episodes. We see it in Stemwinder 2. We see it in, what are some other ones? J. Edgar's Ghost, they've used this. And now the trucks are kind of getting slowed down by a stoplight. And so Lee's asking Petrovich, and he's like, yeah, we're just waiting for truck number 52 to come around. And then that's when they do the swap. So you actually see her pull up back, and then she just takes the food and dumps it so that truck 52 can go on with the detonators that weren't checked. Amanda and Nadine are coming around the corner after Lee has already gone past. So Lee misses, because it's around the corner, Lee misses that whole transition of the trucks going away. It's weird he wouldn't see that semi right there, but Amanda did. So that was kind of interesting. As Amanda's going by where Lee just went, Amanda stops her car, screeches to a stop, she backs up right into Pam Gentry, who's getting into her car. And then Pam gets out and she's got a knife and she's coming after Amanda. And then Nadine comes flying across the hood of the car and knocks the knife out of her hand. It totally isn't Nadine at all. It looks like somebody who played Kate, you know, stunt for Kate before.
I was thinking the same thing.
If you pause it,
it
looked like it. And then now the trucks are now at the airport because now Chang and Jin are there and they're checking out all the seals to make sure everything's been checked by customs and everything. And then Amanda gets on the phone and calls Lee and tells them that they got Pam and then Nadine comes up and says that they need to be looking for truck number 52. And Amanda says to Lee, Nadine says that we need to look for 52. And he goes, so she speaks English. And Amanda goes, she obviously does speak English.
As we all suspected from the beginning.
And then Nadine just kind of laughs like, it was a little joke.
Never show all your cards.
Yeah, exactly. The guy who's driving 52 now, the bad guy, he sees the other agents coming around and then Petrovich is coming. So now the bad guy gets out and gets into that, I don't know what that is, this little airport truck thing. And he starts driving that around.
It's like a gas truck or something?
Yeah, it looks like a fuel truck. Yeah. And now he's shooting at Chang and Jin. And that was so not Lee driving that Hunter car. But I bet you his stunt double guy had a blast doing that. So Lee comes around too, and now Jin's telling him to go around. And how he sees that it's the bad guy is that fuel truck, I don't know. Like how he knows. I mean, that could have just been a fuel truck coming by. But of course, somehow he knows. And so he starts following the fuel truck, and which is a bad thing for the fuel truck guy. It's not going to end well, I'm just going to say. I don't want anybody to get their hopes up.
Spoiler alert.
Does anybody like crispy chicken? Because he's about to be fried. He just hit your Hunter car.
How rude.
I know. So he's trying to run Lee off the road, which seems kind of ironic now knowing the ending. So Lee cuts him off so that he has to go down this quarry area, which is the quarry area they probably used, they definitely used, for the beginning of the episode, which is kind of funny. And so this truck guy is driving. I don't know how he doesn't see that there's a big hole right there that he's going to be jumping off of in a second. So he jumps off and can't stop. And he's, yep, there he goes. How many cars have died on the show going over that? Probably that same exact cliff. Including Lee's own car.
Probably a lot.
Lots and lots and lots. That's so funny. Anyways, so it goes. And because it's a fuel vehicle, we know what's going to happen when it hits the bottom.
It was a pretty brutal crash.
I know. It hit so many times.
The cab, totally, just crushed in the back. It exploded way later than it probably should have.
Yeah, however. When it hit that bottom, it would have blown. Mm-hmm.
It should have exploded way sooner than after it landed and settled.
You know it's a gruesome one when Lee kind of looks down like, oh, man, that was harsh. You know? Gives a, oh, man. So, yeah, it blows up and vehicle no more. No more Ramanujan. Was that what it was? Ramanujan?
Rajmond.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. So now we're back on the plane and they're flying back, presumably to Dulles. And they're all around the little table there. And they're drinking vodka. Some cold vodka. Mm-hmm. Amanda only has a little sip. Everybody else gulps the whole thing. They all seem quite happy with themselves. And they're saying goodbye already. And they kind of split off into their little couples, which is cute. And that's what it seems to be. They're all kind of breaking up into, apparently, they're all in relationships with each other, except for Lee and Amanda at this point.
Right.
Because Nadine sits down and Petrovich is working and she's like, well, would you stop it for a while? And then he's like, oh, and then they're like all lovey-dovey. It's kind of cute.
Pay attention to me.
And then Chang and Jin are kind of laughing, and they're definitely intimate as well.
They're flirty.
And then Lee looks over at Amanda, and she's like,
what?
Nothing.
Not really what?
Nothing.
What?
You got a cute nose.
What?
It's so cute. So random. She goes, what? And then it just ends. And then it just ends.
This is my nomination for the third season awards cutest couple moment.
Oh, cute. That.
You've got a cute nose. That man said that to me, he'd have me.
That's cute. That's a
is
good
it
nomination.
Because of the nose, or you just think it's a cute thing for him to...
Just a random thing to notice. You've got a cute nose.
It's pretty cute. It's definitely cute.
It's the cutest thing ever.
It was cute. Okay, so in the script, just slightly different things here. So all of them are busily writing down their address, and this is funny. All of them are busily writing down their addresses and numbers on pieces of paper and exchanging them. They're like at camp or something. And Amanda says, anyway, if either of you are ever in D.C., and Jin says, or Beijing, and Nadine says, I have never been to D.C. or Beijing, Vladivostok, Sverdlovsk, Novosibirsk, yes, but determined, she says, I am going to travel now, glancing toward Petrovich. Dmitry has promised me. Amanda looks at Nadine, surprised and a little delighted. Amanda says, Nadine, you and Mr. Petrovich? And Nadine smiles, blushes. For many years, you know how it is. And Jin warmly says, yes, it helps soften the hard edges. Amanda glances from Nadine to Jin.
No, she didn't say that.
She did. She did. She says, yes, it helps soften the hard edges. Amanda glances from Nadine to Jin, now even more intrigued. Amanda says, Mr. Chang? And Jin doesn't respond yes or no. She doesn't have to. Her smile says it all. Amanda thinks for a moment, glances over at the men, then at Lee. Putting the finishing touches on shooters of vodka, Lee raises his glass in a toast. To life. Chang and Petrovich respond in Chinese and Russian, respectively. Chang says, this experience has been interesting. Petrovich says, yes, we should not repeat it often. Deadpan. He says, deadpan. We still have to work together. And then they down their drinks. Then, without further words, the three men get up and adjourn to their assistants. Quotes, in quotes, assistants. On Lee. As he joins Amanda, flops down next to her. Amanda says, you look tired. And Lee says, I am. after a beat, I don't know how I would have done it without you. And Amanda says, we work well together. They take a long look at each other. Lee says, I agree. Maybe there's more we can do in the future.
Oh.
Amanda glances over Lee's shoulder at the other couple. She turns back to Lee. And Amanda says, like what? And as Lee leans over and whispers something in Amanda's ear, we freeze frame. Ah! What did he say?
That's a better one. I
Isn't
like
that cute?
Better.
Oh.
I had a smiley face on that one.
It would have driven me crazy not to know what he whispered. I know. Though, so I kind of like what we got. I like what we got.
I know. It's hard.
Yeah.
There's a lot more innuendo in that one.
Yeah.
But I lost my mind.
I thought that Cindy was just too, like, forced. I don't know.
It was kind of random.
Like trying to make something happen that really wasn't happening. Like, instead of, like, the one in the script is more naturally coming from the
I agree.
Story. And,
I agree yeah. with you on that one. Yep. Both were cute, though. Anyways, yeah. There were some differences, so that
yes.
was good.
Miranda, I'm not trying to diss your cutest moment.
Oh, no,
was
that
saying.
Was a cute moment, too, for sure.
No, you can't diss my cute moment.
That was a good
like,
one.
Randomly saying you've got a cute nose is freaking adorable. Like he just couldn't hold it in anymore.
I think if I were Amanda, I would say, what's wrong with you?
Have you been drinking? How many shots did you have?
Adorable as well. I love it. It's just so random and like.
I like it because it's such like, you know, it's a, I think I understand what you're saying because it's such a random feature to say is cute. You know, like it's such a quirky
yeah.
like thing. It's not like saying like, oh, you got a great pair of tits. You know, like that would be weird. But he's like,
oh,
you have a cute nose. You know, and it indicates.
So good. Like.
Yeah. And it indicates he's been like looking at her. Like he's looking
yeah.
at her face and at her features. And it's like, you know, he's like seeing her. He's seeing her. Like,
and
it,
I'm
nose,
sorry,
but
if you like a person's nose, that means you pretty much like everything about them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't just go, that person has a really nice nose, you know, but everything else is a little mess, you know?
You put that on a shirt.
You got
someone says that you have a nice nose, you love everything about them.
I had a guy at a club, and this is when I was married. This is probably 2004-ish. He comes up to me. I was on my way to the bathroom, and he goes, you got a pretty mouth. I was like, what the fuck?
Okay, that, I don't know about that one.
You got a real pretty mouth.
I would have been like, creeper.
I know it was. I just go, thank you.
Yeah.
It was so random. Oh, it's funny. Anyway, sorry. It is most definitely time for our special segment, Dottie's Bookshelf. Dottie has pulled a couple of fan fictions that tie into the episode, Three Little Spies. Her first recommendation is Three Little Spies and a Leaper by Dottie, i.e. not Y. This story was written in October 2001 and has a little over 6,000 words. This is not only an AU story, but a crossover with Quantum Leap. Sam Beckett leaps into Amanda's life and, well, chaos ensues. Dottie's second recommendation is Software on a Sesame Seed Bun by The Yank and the Brit. The story takes place between Three Little Spies and All the World's a Stage. It was written in 2008 and has nearly 28,000 words. This is the author's attempt to fill in the gap between those two episodes. We hope you enjoy these stories. As always, you can find them on fanfic.net and we'll link them on our website at mkcpodcast.com in the show notes.
Next on the agenda is mail from Mrs. Marston, who has quite a lot of messages due to so many people having time at home to send them to her. First, let me shout out to Kathy, who is catching up on the podcast now from the very beginning. She has sent us a few messages as she is listening. One, talking about If Thoughts Could Kill back in season one. I listened to If Thoughts Could Kill, the episode podcast today during my lunch break. Then this evening, I was watching Bruce's series, Bring 'Em Back Alive, and Tom Sawyer wrote the first episode on that series. I don't remember which of you was amused by the name, but thought it was a fun coincidence. That was me. I laughed at that quite a bit. She also mentioned that she loved the interview with Greg and Paul. It was fabulous. And that she enjoyed hearing all of their memories on set. One last message from her. This one's on A Lovely Little Affair. She said, A Lovely Little Affair is one of my favorite episodes. Something you didn't mention is that Ben Murphy had his own series called Alias Smith and Jones in the early 70s, a Western with another star, Pete Duel. Love the bedroom scene with Amanda and Lee. Love this episode, especially Lee sneaking into Amanda's bedroom.
Don't we all?
Don't we all? The next message is from another new listener. This is from Leo. And Leo says, I am so excited to find your podcast. The coronavirus stay-at-home days have had me revisiting my old faves from the 80s, including SMK. I was in middle school and high school during the original run. I knew I couldn't be the only one still getting a kick out of this show. Yay! Another new listener, Lori, also is catching up on the episodes and sent us a few comments. Her first message, I absolutely love your podcast. Side note, we absolutely love that you love them. Thank you for the hours you put into bringing insight, laughter, knowledge of profound and meaningless, issues. Also, background on actors, writers, producers, and directors. All around fun. You guys rock. So sweet. You rock too. Let's see. The next one. Oh, this is still from Lori. And she says, greatest banter in the episode. We're going all the way back, folks. The first time. I want that package. Good. I don't. I'll come by your house. You most certainly will not. She also has a question. At the club when Lee comes down the stairs, how did Amanda know his name? Should we assume he told her on the phone when she called the number on the card? I never really thought about
that's
it.
What I kind of figured about.
That he introduced himself.
Yeah,
on the phone.
Because he also had to tell her the address of the place and where to meet and what time and all that. So he would have told her by then.
Good thought.
But I'm surprised he gave her his real name. That's what I'm surprised about. First off, you know?
Yeah.
Well, it was Lee Stedman, so not Lee Stedman.
On the card.
No, I'm just joking.
No, it wasn't on the card or anything. Yeah, it was.
Yeah,
he just had a real name.
He
just
always used Stedman.
Yeah, he always used Stedman. But that's what I'm saying. He didn't this time.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't give her a fake name at all. It was like
he
knew.
He knew she was going to be sticking around.
Yeah.
And then one more message here from Lori. She's talking about Saved by the Bell. Talking about the golf cart scene, I believe it may have been a goof on Bruce's part. The lines that crossed were Lee saying, it's all over, and Amanda saying, I was. Then Lee ended the conversation with saying, it's all over. Maybe he was only supposed to say it once at the end.
Yeah, he definitely, he stepped on her lines for sure.
Did he?
Yeah.
Did he? I don't remember it.
Oh, yeah.
As many times as I've watched it, I didn't even catch it.
Yeah, she says, I don't know how they can confuse me for you. You're so much taller. That's so cute.
Aw. So that is everything from the mailbag. You too can have your words read on the podcast. Send us a message either on our website, mkcpodcast.com, or on Facebook or Twitter at mkcpodcast.
It's time to pull out some videos from the video vault that reflect the episode Three Little Spies. The first video is set to the song Stand By Your Man by Tammy Wynette and is perfect for the three dedicated women standing by their spy. Credit goes to Tessa Kendall McKenzie for putting the video together. The second video highlights Lee and Amanda working on an international stage. The video is set to the song Rule the World by Take That, and the creativity is powered by Love SNK. These videos can be found on YouTube, and we have provided links on our website at mkcpodcast.com.
Okay, so that is everything we have for this episode. We thank you so much for listening and invite you to come back next time when we figure out why exactly the eyes have it. Thanks, everybody. Bye.
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 Bye. Bye.